My lecture is titled, this will go from until 4:30, and then my colleague, Ewell Belice, who replaced me as head of pathology informatics at the University of Michigan, will speak on a very exciting topic. My title is Pathology Informatics is a Key Element in New Healthcare Delivery Models and Technologies. I'm active emeritus professor of pathology. I retired 2 years ago. I'm semi-retired, or what I call hemi-retired. And to qualify as an active emeritus, you have to be able to walk 6 feet without any assistance. I'm going to stay at the podium. I'm not going to prove to you that's possible. My blog, and the reason I'm pointing this out, for 2 years I've been blogging 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, and this is the URL for my blog. And what I say is, I exist, I blog, therefore I exist. This is my new obsession. I write about laboratory matters, and what my blogging has done, and the reason I'm pointing this out, is that I started thinking about these new models of healthcare delivery because I was blogging about them. When you blog, it's forced me to get outside my academic niche, which was pathology informatics, and I think in much broader terms. Because I'm writing 300 words a day times 5 days a week, 1,500 words a week, it causes me to examine various aspects of healthcare that I wasn't looking at before. And it was through this blogging that I have discovered these new healthcare delivery models. And in looking at these models, I've discovered they have great relevance for the lab industry. So you may not have heard about these models. I'm going to proceed. This is the overarching goal for this lecture. I've found that the transformation that's happened in healthcare in recent years after many decades of stability has been astonishing. And the stimuli for this transformation has been varied, including economic, scientific, technical, societal, political forces, all impacting on healthcare delivery. So I'm going to start this lecture by listing what I call 8 new healthcare delivery models and technologies. And you'll see that these have a connection to the lab and the pathology industry. And as I said before, it's my blogging that's forced me to look at these because I have to create, Monday through Friday, a sort of interesting set of notes to maintain my readership of my blog. And tomorrow afternoon at 4 o'clock, we'll run a parallel session. And Steve Still and myself will talk about corporate blogs and talk about blogging in general. I'll talk to you about some of the mechanics of blogging. Now, because of the focus of this conference, I will pay particular attention to the pivotal role of pathology informatics in these models. And my goal, you may not agree with these, you may say some of these things are going nowhere. On the other hand, some of these I think have significance and have traction. And we'll talk about, or I want you to think about the relevance of these. So I'll list the 8 emerging models. I'll describe each in detail. Then we'll talk about common themes of these models. I will then integrate and synthesize the above information to generate a working agenda for pathology informatics for the next 5 years. And that's, to a certain extent, the guts of this, because I'm interested in where we're headed in pathology informatics. And finally, I'll do a summary. So this is one of the key slides. These are the models that are emerging, some of which you may have heard about, some of which may be familiar to you. First of all, is something I've been interested in for 3 or 4 years, which is direct access testing. This is consumer-managed testing. These are websites where consumers sign on and can order tests for themselves. About half the states do not require a physician order for laboratory tests. And for those of you who do not follow this closely, you can get a panel of about 20 to 22 tests for about $45. Now, for many people, as you know, the copay is expanding in many tests offered in physicians' offices. For many consumers, this may be much less than the copay that they would pay in their physician's office. And guess who's performing these tests? Mainly LabCorp, the same lab that's performing the test for the physicians. And guess what the turnaround time for these results are? I've done it myself. It's about 25 hours from the time of the blood draw, and a PDF appears in my mailbox with all the results. Now, when I have lab tests run at the University of Michigan at the health service on myself, my yearly physical, I say to the physician, when can I see the results? He said, wait a week. He said, and then call every day. And we'll tell you when we have the report. And I said, how do I get a copy of the report? He said, you have to go to the medical record room and sign a release form, and they will Xerox a copy and give it to you. So you tell me what's the most efficient way to run laboratory tests. Personal health records, PHRs, the relationship to patient portals. The third is cloud computing, healthcare computing loose to the web. Then one of my topics of great interest to me, which is the merger of pathology and lab medicine and radiology into a new specialty, so-called diagnostic medicine, and with a new information system called a DIS, or Diagnostic Information System, which is a merged LIS, RIS, and PACS system. Now, I'm getting a little bit ahead of the curve here, but remember, I'm looking 3 years, 4 years hence. What Steve just gave a superb lecture on is multiple biomarkers and algorithms for screening and diagnosis. By the way, about 4 weeks ago, I called up Steve Wong, and I said, do you have any questions about the title that we talked about? He said, yes, I don't understand what you're getting at. I said, well, it's a good thing we're talking about it now, and I explained it to him. He said, that's a very interesting question. And I said, I've assumed you've given this lecture 50 times before. He says, no, I've never given it before, but I need to give it some thought. So basically, that's what came out of that discussion. Home testing options, improved home kit testing, and point-of-care testing. Most laboratory professionals define their scope of work of what happens in their laboratory. And I would put to you that there is a huge new market for laboratory testing in terms of glucometers, home test kits. And because most lab professionals don't define that as their frame of reference or their area of responsibility, the fact of the matter is that lab professionals could function as consultants in terms of lab tests flowing into patient personal health records and could assist consumers in terms of managing that data, a whole new industry which has never been explored. New healthcare venues, retail, and that includes these big box stores like Walmart that's setting up these walk-in clinics, which generally do not perform testing, or if they do, it's really CLIA wave testing. But I believe that these walk-in retail clinics will begin to offer laboratory testing, and laboratories, if they do non-CLIA wave studies, lab professionals could provide QC oversight over this lab testing going on in these big box stores. And you also have pharmacists that are now assisting people in terms of managing their anticoagulation therapy. So these are examples of changes that are occurring in terms of the whole lab market. And finally, Scott Shreve is going to be talking about Health 2.0 and Medicine 2.0. This is web-enabled quality healthcare. If you talk to your physician, they will tell you stories about patients that are walking into their offices with printouts from the web, and they've explored their diseases by querying on the web. Now, the older physicians, when they see this, are deciding to retire. The younger physicians are saying this is a whole new role for a physician. It's not essentially dictating to patients how to behave, but acting as a kind of collaborating professional and a coach to some of these people who may, in fact, may know more about esoteric diseases than the physicians themselves. So we're now going to walk through these eight healthcare models. The first is direct access testing. I've told you about what this is all about. This is a very attractive business. Customers pay with credit cards up front. And cash has great appeal for lab providers because most lab business is discounted. These websites direct consumers to the nearest reference lab, patient service center, for the blood draws. And LabCorp is doing most of this business, although it's not obvious from the websites that it's LabCorp. But you can find out very quickly who's doing it, because when you order the tests, they direct you to go to a patient service center to collect the blood, and you'll see that that's a LabCorp, generally, patient service center. Quest tried to get into this business, and they found it uninteresting or unprofitable, and they backed out. That was an initiative called Quest Test. Now, one of the things that interests me and amuses me is that there's this question about controversy about how abnormals are managed. In other words, people that criticize direct access testing, they say, what if people ignore abnormal results? Now think about this. Who do you think is going to go onto a website and spend $45 out of pocket? Are these people who care nothing about their health? These are the most highly motivated people in among the consumers. The fact that they're going to ignore positives is astonishing. They're also very high income, highly educated individuals. So this is not a problem. So what are the broader implications of consumer-managed testing? Many of these websites provide interpretive information about how to interpret abnormal lab results, or they direct clients to other websites. Consumers are getting accustomed to very rapid turnaround time for test results. So they're not going to be satisfied, as I am, to be told wait 7 days and then call every day. People are going to get used to a PDF file with the results appearing in their mailbox in 24 hours. Consumers are getting much more sophisticated about the true cost of lab testing. Now let's talk a little bit about PHRs. I call this technology in search of a truly useful application. What you have are major companies like Microsoft and Google with Google Health and HealthVault. They've stirred interest in PHRs. Now, like RIOs, regional health information organizations, PHRs are languishing, in my view, because of a lack of motivation to adopt and technical challenges for most consumers. In other words, there's a buzz about this among the technorati, but for the most part, it's not a useful technology. And the reason is that the most important information for consumers is locked into their physician office EMRs or hospital EMRs. So what we need is for this phenomenon to take off is so-called patient portals, which would transport or replicate data from office EMRs and hospital EMRs to PHRs. Now, there's a very successful office EMR called eClinicalWorks. This company and the CEO is promoting what they call patient portals, and particularly generic patient portals, which would replicate data from office EMRs to the PHRs. With this product, patients are giving passwords that allow them to log into their physician's EMR patient practice management system in order to view their health records and input data. So the success for PHRs is dependent on these patient portals. These patient portals also provide an outbound communication channel for physicians to essentially send reminders and notes to patients. So the president of eClinicalWorks is promoting patient portals as a link to all major EHR, and I think this is an important development. Now, pathology informatics has a relationship to the three major healthcare data domains. And these are the health system records, the physician office clinic, and the consumer or home record. And recall that lab data is very relevant for all these three domains. Lab test results are unique as a critical component of each of these domains. The consumer domain is increasing in importance because of DAT results, home glucose testing, and home kits. So we need to link these three domains. The web will provide connectivity across these domains, and I believe that pathology informatics will lead the way. And increasingly, lab professionals are getting much more service-oriented because of lab outreach programs. Now, healthcare computing moves to the cloud. What's the cloud? You may have heard the term SaaS, software as a service. So the cloud is essentially a set of servers around the world with a single namespace. The cloud will have the ability to ingest content from anywhere and move content anywhere. Now, storage of PACS data is already occurring in the cloud because many hospitals cannot support the storage demands of their PACS. And storage and bandwidth is now a commodity. So, in fact, radiology computing has already moved or been outsourced to servers, and because this is a commodity, it's very inexpensive to store PACS data off-site. Cloud computing is also linked to the idea of the decline of shrink-wrap software. We will no longer buy software, but purchase access to software as a service. Now, this is a fairly bold statement, but healthcare computing will be the last industry to move to the cloud because healthcare computing is technically backward. However, lab computing is quite innovative, and as I said, radiology has already moved to the cloud for PACS storage. So this is one of the reasons that I'm interested in aligning lab and pathology with radiology, because in many ways, they're much more innovative than we are. This is a topic that I've alluded to and something that I blogged about 15 months ago. This is an idea which has been circulating for about 2 years and stimulated in part by major purchases of IVD companies by GE and Siemens. Siemens has made major purchases of IVD companies, and Siemens in 3 years has gone from zero to the second largest IVD company in the world, second only to Roche Diagnostics, and they've done that in 3 years. Part of the impetus is coming from the overlap of radiology and pathology in terms of what's called molecular imaging. If you don't know much about molecular imaging, you need to Google the term molecular imaging, and you'll get millions of hits. Molecular imaging involves injection into patients a radio-opaque material plus a ligand that binds to, let's say, tumor tissues as a way of lighting up tumors as part of medical imaging. So what's going on is that radiology, in short order, will begin to be able to deliver specific diagnoses as opposed to merely defining space occupying lesions. So to me, this is another compelling reason for radiology to think about conversion or merger with pathology, because we need each other. The radiologists need the pathologists in order to validate the accuracy of the diagnoses flowing out of molecular imaging. So you talk about the rapidity of new knowledge. Basically, I started talking about this merger 15 months ago. 2 months ago, Robert Michel launched a conference in Philadelphia devoted to this specific topic, that is the merger of pathology, radiology, and lab medicine, and it attracted 200 registrants. So this idea has gone from zero to 60 miles an hour in about 13 months. Because of the complexity of medicine, I predict that diagnostic specialists will concentrate on diagnostic diseases of a single system. In other words, if this ever takes hold, I think what we may see is diagnostic specialists who may, let's say they might specialize in liver diseases or let's say cardiovascular, and they would do both medical imaging, interpret biomarkers, and be able to interpret morphologic aspects of pathologic lesions under a microscope, or let's say with digital pathology. So that's my view of what may come about. I also predict that these diagnostic specialists will play a major role in the selection of therapy. Now, this slide deals with what I call the IT consequences of the emergence of the specialty of diagnostic medicine. So if we see conversion or merger of radiology with lab medicine and pathology, I would predict that our information systems, LISs, RISs, and PACSs, may merge into a single system, the diagnostic information system. In many ways, this would be very advantageous because the radiologists have not adopted a coding system like SNOMED. So we can teach them SNOMED. In turn, the radiologists will help us, the pathologists, in terms of greater use of DICOM or extensions of DICOM to support what it is we do in pathology. I know this is fairly radical, and John Gilbertson talked about this, but I'm not in favor of ancillary systems being merged into the electronic medical record, and John talked about enterprise systems. I believe that the hospital EMR should only be a reporting conduit for clinicians. And Dr. Belice and myself are great enthusiasts about what's called a federated architecture. It does not make any sense to me for us to have, with 40 years of experience in terms of formatting lab data, to format all the data on the LIS side and then essentially deconstruct the data, send a data stream using HL7 to the central system, the EMR system, where you have people that know not that much about lab, reconstructing it and reporting it to the clinicians. With the federated architecture, I believe that they should give us white space in the EMR, which we can then essentially, with that white space, format the data as we see fit. And I would also suggest to you that molecular diagnostics is becoming so complicated that there's no way that we can report out through the EMR. So I favor autonomy of the diagnostic systems. And not only are the diagnostic systems getting more complicated with molecular diagnostics, but what's also going on is that many times smaller community hospitals are turfing at the back end to esoteric reference labs that will do their proteomic and genomic testing. So it's not just the complexity of what goes on in the hospital, but I favor a development of a network of radiology, pathology, and our esoteric proteomic and genomic labs that will form a diagnostic network. And it's going to be impossible to wedge this into EMRs. I won't go into this in detail, but genomic, proteomics, and metabolomics are ushering in a new era of lab testing. This is a new golden age. I won't go into, this was dealt with very well by Dr. Wong. I won't be going into this in detail. The FDA is being drawn into this process. I believe their goal is to regulate what they call IVD MIAs and provide knowledge of algorithms. Bob McDonald and I were discussing this before about what FDA's true goal is, and he suggested that what they're interested in really is having clinical trials of these new so-called multiplexed sets of tests, and many of these proprietary multiplex biomarkers come to market without adequate clinical trials. So Bob thinks that their FDA's real agenda is to push controlled clinical trials, which some of the companies may not want to do, at least at the highest level. So my preference is to avoid regulatory oversight over multiplex biomarkers and algorithms, but perhaps if the answer is to develop clinical trials, then I'd be in favor of that. Now, I want to talk very briefly about the early health model, because this is something that I find very, very interesting. What you have is Siemens and GE as part of their advertising campaign, and partly because of their interest in IVDs, are pushing what GE calls an early health model and what Siemens calls similarly early detection and treatment of disease. Now, what's the most important thing here is that you have two huge multinational companies in their ads talking about pre-symptomatic, pre-clinical detection of disease. Now, just think about that for a minute. Pre-symptomatic, pre-clinical detection of disease. Think about the standard health model. And think about your visit to your physician. When you go into your physician's office, what's the first thing your physician says to you? How are you feeling? And are you having any problems? If you say, I'm feeling fine, what will the physician say? I will see you in 12 months. The model's based on symptoms and essentially chief complaints of the patients. Now, if we're moving to preclinical, pre-symptomatic diagnosis, who makes preclinical, pre-symptomatic diagnosis? Who makes those diagnoses? The laboratory or the radiologist? So what this does is move laboratory medicine and medical imaging to the center of the stage. In other words, we're going to make the diagnoses. So this is very, very radical, and you have huge companies that are pushing this model. They're doing it in terms of a kind of enlightened self-interest because they're in the diagnostic business. But essentially, this changes a lot of the understanding of how disease is diagnosed. And this last point, I'm talking about the Roche model, which is the idea of companion diagnostics, which is a different business model, which is linking a test to the prescription of a biotech drug. At any rate, what this means is this early health model is that the goals are changing to, and in fact, the patients are very enthusiastic about this because they're saying, I don't want you to tell me when I have a tumor that's 4 centimeters, in width, I want you to tell me what's going to happen to me 5 years hence or 10 years hence. And with biomarkers, we can do that. I won't dwell on this at great length, but essentially this is an exploding industry, point of care testing in the home, lab kits, and the emerging information management challenge associated with these. So this movement toward home care is inexorable. It's analogous to the migration of patients from ICUs to general care and from ORs to surgery centers. It's going into an environment where the cost is less. Home care is less expensive but requires a new set of support networks. I believe we need to view all point of care testing, including home use of glucometers, as an information management challenge for lab professionals. And we need to redefine the scope of what we do. I'm sure most of you think in terms of the scope of your work is what happens in your own laboratory. But I think there's going to be need for supporting consumers in terms of managing this information. So that hospital labs could and should position themselves as managers and integrators of consumers' lab data on a subscription basis. I won't talk about the business model there, but I think that's a possibility, a new option. We've talked about these retail pharmacies, walk-in clinics. This is the hottest thing. Walmart is opening up these walk-in clinics in big box stores. Part of this speaks to the inadequacies of office and clinical practices, particularly in the management of patients with chronic disease like diabetes. There's also pressure on Walmart to go green and also to develop a new type of healthcare system for its 1.2 million employees and 100 million customers. Retail pharmacy chains like Walgreens and CVS are making major investments in healthcare to increase traffic and gain profits. So you have the large pharmacy chains moving very aggressively into healthcare delivery systems. My own view is we should view all of this as healthy competition and ultimately clinical venues where point-of-care testing panels will be offered to patients. Many of these walk-in clinics are focusing on the care of chronic diseases, and they're discovering with patients with diabetes that pharmacists will spend a lot of time with these patients and get much better results than the 3 minutes or 5 minutes with a physician. The health insurers are also understanding that a large portion of their benefits are allocated to patients with chronic disease, and some of these costs are avoidable by spending more time with patients. And pharmacists are stepping into this care delivery void. For example, Geisinger Health Clinic has satellite clinics manned by pharmacists to monitor anticoagulation therapy. So wellness and anti-aging is evolving into a major industry. I talked before about Googling a topic. What you need to do is punch into your search engine the topic of anti-aging. You'll get millions of hits. So a lot of money is being spent on this industry. And in fact, the first thing that's being done in this an anti-aging workup is to run a panel of 100 or 150 tests. To finish up with my list of new healthcare models, there's something called Health and Medicine 2.0. Now, with Health 2.0, the notion is all constituents focus on value and competition as a catalyst to improve safety. This is what I alluded to before, is that more educated consumers are browsing the web and reading about health topics. There's also the notion of transparency here, where health systems are being evaluated, physicians are being evaluated, and people have access to all this data on the web. So this is the money quote. The web provides an inexpensive, broad-reaching, sophisticated, common meeting ground for consumers and professionals alike. And you may not be comfortable with this, but what you have are consumers that are becoming very knowledgeable and coming to the office or coming to the laboratory with a great deal of knowledge about their conditions. Here's an amazing statistic. Largely preventable chronic disease are estimated to cause 86% of deaths in Europe. We need more ownership of health. And I think that despite all our huge investments in things like biomarkers, simple educational programs would be sufficient to improve the health of many people. This is what I call the democratization of healthcare. And keep in mind that healthcare consumers are very focused on lab tests and lab results. Everyone knows their cholesterol numbers. These are data that consumers can understand and absorb and follow. So we're a major part of this healthcare consumerism. Dr. Scott Shreve is going to be talking more about this later in the conference. This just talks about ownership of health by consumers, implications for the clinical lab. We will require a new generation of healthcare practitioners who are more assured in having patients questioning their advice. And lab personnel will be drawn into this retail health setting through direct access testing, personal health records, home testing, walk-in clinics. So we're going to be part of this phenomenon. Now, I've got about 12 more minutes. Let's distill those 8 models, distill them into macro trends that we need to be aware of. The first is the decentralization of healthcare delivery process. When I got out of medical school, there were physician offices and there were hospitals. Now we have single physician practitioners being replaced by multi-physician clinics. We have specialized cardiovascular and orthopedic hospitals. We have general care hospitals with enhanced ambulatory services and a whole set of hospitalists. So the physicians in the community turn over care to the hospitalists based in the hospitals. And home health care is expanding. So this whole notion of this of decentralization is getting more and more important. The second common theme is software as a web-based service. This is what I alluded to before. We're not going to buy software anymore, we're going to rent it. With Google applications, we have word processing spreadsheets moving to the web. Ultimately, we'll have mobile devices, smart cell phones. They'll be the devices of choice for cloud computing. And as I said before, healthcare information technology will be the last to adopt cloud computing, except for us in the lab world. And the radiology is already using the cloud to store images. A third common theme is integration of clinical services. The most important model is the cancer hospital. individual specialties get submerged, and what you have is the team approach. I believe the patients derive great benefit because of the obliteration of silos. And as I said before, I personally favor the merger or integration of pathology, lab medicine, and radiology into a department of diagnostic medicine. And I therefore also in favor of the merging or blending of the LIS, the RIS, and the PACS. And finally, actually John Gilbertson, I didn't know he was going to do this, but he suggested that we should be doing imaging as a part of all autopsies. And I did a blog note in which I made up the word catopsy. And by that I mean I believe that every autopsy should start with a CT scan, and many of those should terminate with the CT scan, but then we could do minimally invasive biopsies of organs to further define the lesions that are turned up with the CT scan. So that would be another way of blending medical imaging with a classic procedure of the autopsy. Another common theme is more competition for consumer dollars. These are some examples of trends introducing more competition: the growth of specialty hospitals, hospitals hiring hospitalists, hospitals expanding into ambulatory care services, increased insurance co-payments, forcing consumers to pay much more attention to what they're paying for care. Penalties for MDs ordering lab tests outside the insurance network, medical tourism, a total hip replacement at the best hospital in India is about $10,000. And that includes travel on an airplane. That same procedure in most cities of the United States is $50,000 to $60,000. Web-based systems for assessing the quality of hospitals, and finally, transparent pricing of services leading to price negotiations. Another theme is the increasing power of consumers. Consumers have much more choices. There's transparency of pricing. They can order their own laboratory tests. For the most part, laboratory professionals are very insular, with a focus on clinicians as their primary clients, and they pay little attention to consumer-driven healthcare. And finally, the notion of retail lab services, and this captures the mandate for labs to be more service-oriented. And finally, the common theme, in terms of my common themes, information management. If you look at these eight models, increasingly you see information technology and information management is becoming much more important. For example, I believe that the large national reference laboratories, although right now they talk mainly about their expertise in doing esoteric testing, I think increasingly they will talk about their expertise in information technology and their ability to integrate their IT systems with those of their hospital clients. So finally, this is what I call a working agenda for pathology informatics for the next 5 years. And John Gilbertson has talked about some of these things. Recruit younger pathologists, champion the conversion to digital pathology departments, which John talked about, support the API. And by the way, Mike McNeely's in the front row. Mike, would you stand up? Mike is the president of API, and I think those of you that have an interest in pathology informatics, if you're not already a member, should join the API. It's the only professional association totally focused on informatics. In your own state or local societies or at the national level, suggest information topics at general pathology meetings. Lobby for what I call the federated architecture, and you will be talking about that immediately following myself. Assist hospital CIOs in optimization of lab ordering and reporting. Consider the merger of pathology, clinical lab with radiology. Suggest the integration of DAT programs in your lab outreach. In other words, what I'm suggesting here is that as a service in your local community, you should be offering DAT services, and then when you detect abnormals, those patients could be referred into your own hospital system. Provide strong support for research programs to bridge the gap between bench research and applied medicine. And finally, embrace healthcare consumer consumerism, I believe every laboratory should make available to customers PDF-based lab reports. Finally, and in conclusion, here's the take-home points. In the last 5 years, we've seen a period of intense ferment in healthcare and lab medicine. This decentralization of healthcare and consumerism has spawned competition. There are many new models of healthcare delivery, many of which are very relevant to information technology and to the lab. One of the new phenomena that may flow out of this is a merger of clinical path, anatomic path, and radiology to create a new discipline. And although pathology informatics has matured, and this conference is an example of this maturity, we need to pursue a more aggressive agenda to prepare for all these changes which are now in the works. Thank you very much. I should tell you that all of the lectures for these 3 days will be posted by next Monday or Tuesday on my blog, and then a couple days after that on the conference website. So as soon as you get home early next week, you'll have access to all of these PowerPoint lectures, and shortly after that, you will have essentially podcasts all the audio portion. So by the end of next week, you'll have access to both the PowerPoint and all the audio portions for your study subsequently. Thank you very much. Now, next speaker is Dr. Belice, my able replacement at the University of Michigan. He's going to swap the PCs. So while he's doing that, let's just ask, do you have any questions about anything I've said or anything else that's come up? While Yul's doing the swap, I can respond to those.
Peter Boyd from Naples, Florida. The Walmart lab testing store they set up in Port Charlotte, I'm happy to report, has failed completely because the customers do not trust Walmart, who abused their employees, has had numerous class action lawsuits against employees' abuses and whatnot. But an even bigger issue is, how does all this testing get waived? And the Medical Device Manufacturers Association of America have been promoting waived tests and running over the Food and Drug Administration, as well as the CLIA Oversight Committee, something I'll bet 90% of the people here don't really realize. And myself and Ray Osman, who's been in the laboratory business for over 25 years, got a petition signed by over 115 physicians in Naples, and we sent it up to Congress, and we sent it to the government officials that are dealing with this, and I talked to Senator Frist about it. But without this running over of FDA and the CLIA Oversight Committee by the Medical Device Manufacturing Association of America, you cannot have all this uncontrolled point-of-care testing, which gives you bullshit results when done by people who don't know how to do a lab test. They've never been trained on it. Some of them don't even have a high school education. Many do. But can you imagine getting a call in the middle of the night, which happens, oh, I've had this test, it says I have a critical value. Now, what am I going to do? My potassium's 12. Of course, they should have been dead 3 hours ago. So you know the test was wrong. So I think it's incumbent on all of us here who are medical laboratory professionals to contact your representatives in Congress and the Senate and whatnot and roll back this stuff. In 1992, there were something like 8 wave tests. Now there's over a couple hundred wave tests, and last year they did something of the order of 7 billion wave tests in America, all because they're able to run over the FDA and CLIA Oversight Committee. And of course, you want to know, why would they do that? Because they realized they can sell many more medical devices without any regulations, without having to do quality control or having to do anything else than if they do have regulations. So yeah, I think one of your mega trends here, the unabashed and unethical pursuit of big bucks, has almost destroyed our system of quality care.
In re- response to your first point, I think you're right that many of the Walmart initiatives have failed. I think what they're discovering is that, to a certain extent, many of these clinics they're creating in collaboration with local hospitals, so the referral network is a much more robust network, and I think they're exploring that. So I read about that. I'm not an advocate of uncontrolled testing, and I can't comment on the second piece about FDA being rolled over, but I'll look into that. Yule's ready to talk. I'm going to turn over the microphone to him.